G'day everyone, this is episode 23 of AT3 and we are your Aussie Top 3. My name is Greg, I'm your Captain Boomerang, and as always, I'm joined by my fellow Aussies, the Stinger, Steve Ray, and Little Sherby, Stacey Herbert. It's been a while, but welcome back to AT3.
Thank you.
It has been a while, but I'm sure today's episode is going to be a good listen.
Yeah, hopefully.
Yeah. I was just saying to Greg that since the last time we recorded, Victoria's been in two lockdowns.
Yeah. And wow. We had one.
We had one.
Yeah.
Jeez.
We all thought COVID. Back when we recorded our last episode, the only variants we were talking about were Lokis. And now it's now it's proper ones. And we're like, oh, all right. but this episode is going to be a little strange, I think, because we, in a sense at least anyway, because we are here to choose our top three jobbers, those guys or girls who seem to be a mainstay of wrestling shows, but that's kind of despite the fact they tend to lose a lot. But we all know who they are, and we know that there they are. They've got their place, but it's like, why is he on the show? He loses all the time. Exactly. So, we might have a bit of conjecture on this one, depending on who we each pick. But I mean, like we said, we've always said it's just our general thoughts. We're not trying to rank them in any definitive order. But having said that, let's get started with our jobbers. And of course, ladies first. So, Stacey, who makes your list of, those that, what do they call it? Always looking up at the lights.
Okay. So, I think I might go with my controversial pick first, just get it out of the way.
Steve Austin.
John Cena.
Yeah, WCW Steve Austin.
Yeah, well, that could work.
So I'm going to start my pick with asking a question. Do you think that a five-time women/Divas champion can be considered a jobber?
It would normally, I would say, look, if it was a man, I would say, is it someone who has like won the title because of Money in the Bank or like sneaky shonkiness, you know what I mean, or whatever? But they don't really do that a lot with the women. And they haven't done enough women's Money in the Bank, for instance, to have like five-time winner.
Yeah. You
know? I don't know. My gut says no, but.
Yeah, me too.
I think, I don't know, I'm open to being convinced. So we'll see.
Okay. All right. I'm going to try. I'm putting it out there for the universe. So it certainly wasn't my first choice when I thought of jobbers, and I did want to pick someone from the women's division. But when I really sat down and thought about it, this was someone that came to mind who I think, at least for the latter part of her career, has been a jobber. And that person is Mickie James.
Okay, yeah.
I can go with that, yeah.
I can sort of see that. Like, yeah, I know what you mean. I thought you were going to say Molly Holly, to be honest. And then I was thinking, how many times did Molly win the title? And I have no idea.
Yeah.
Because
that
would have
been a good guess.
Because I thought, like, yeah, they gave her the title, but it was usually... like transitional, you know what I mean? So like,
yeah. The only time that she really did a lot was when she beat Trish Stratus and then sort of she never really hit the heights. And then when she came back, it was like, she was just back to put other people over.
Yeah. And even the victory over Trish was to eventually put Trish over again. You know what I mean? So it was like that.
Yeah,
you lost the title, but you, like, Austin lost the title to Kane, like, for a day, you know what I mean? And then, who's ever going to defeat
first blood match?
Yeah, it's like, who's ever going to beat the monster Kane? It's like, Steve Austin beats him the next day. It's like, oh, right, okay. Right. But it made Austin look like $1 million because, you know, the night before we were like, fuck, Kane's unbeatable. And it's like, oh, okay. But yeah, I don't know. All right. We'll We'll go with it because
I can see how. I can see how, definitely, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, they did bring her back to, when she came back to NXT, for instance, it was literally like come in and lose to Asuka, and I think that's all it was ever supposed to be. And then she got a great reaction, and they went, "Oh, maybe you could stick around for a bit." But
then and they helped to put it with Alexa, didn't they?
Yeah. So
yeah.
But anyway,
I was honestly really surprised to read that she was a 5-time champion, and you might think when I say that maybe I wasn't watching during those years, but I was. And I'm still surprised because I can't remember her winning the belt 5 times.
I only remember it once against Trish Stratus at WrestleMania. Yeah. That's all I remember.
When the crowd
turned
on Trish, yeah. Mm.
Yeah. Yeah, I felt so behind this pick at the start until I looked at her title history and I thought, ooh, did I make a mistake here? But no, I don't think I did because I counted how many televised matches she lost in the last couple of years of her career. I counted 50 televised matches she lost.
Shit.
Mm. Yeah.
She definitely was like, once she came back to NXT and slash wherever she, I can't remember, Raw or SmackDown, whichever one, like main roster stuff, like she was definitely then in that position of, you know who she is. And if Charlotte or Nia Jax or Sasha or whoever beats Mickey, you'd be like, oh, that's Mickey James. Like she's, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
It'd be like if
I honestly
Booker T or someone came in, you know, like you'd be like, oh yeah, he was 5-time champion and then he lost to like 5 people in a row or something. Like
mm-hmm.
Yeah. When I look back at Mickie James's career, like on and off with WWE, in my opinion, she has been losing matches for the better part of her career. And that's why I think she does count as a jobber. You know, she's not like a Gilbert level jobber, but I think she's a jobber.
Hey, spoilers.
But the reason why I think she should be more than a jobber, and I think most of you can agree with me, was when she came in 2005, she was really a breath of fresh air because around that time, you know, we still had the workhorses such as Trish and Lita. But the division was really model heavy. It was still around the time, I guess, of like the Diva Search. And they were just pulling women from that competition left and right and giving them contracts. So it was really refreshing to see Mickey come in, who was a seasoned wrestler. And she didn't look like a model. Like, she's beautiful, but she doesn't look like, you know, like a bikini model. And it's that was refreshing. Like,
she's not Maurice, you know.
Exactly. Because not many women are Maurice, you know.
No, well,
Mickey's like, I think when we all think of the highlight of Mickey James's career, we think of her feud with Trish Stratus. Like, it was just must watch TV, and her match at WrestleMania was amazing. As Greg touched on, we can all remember how the crowd turned against Trish, and I think that was the first time they sort of ever turned against Trish because she was such a well-loved face of the division for so long. And that really shows how well-loved Mickey was at the time because she was still a new face in the sense of things compared to Trish, who had well and truly proven herself at that point. And yeah, to me, there is a big difference between jobbers and seasoned veterans like Chris Jericho, who put over worthy talent. And I think Mickey James would have been a great person to put over young talent. And she certainly has tried to, but to me, she has just been treated as nothing more than a jobber for the later part of her career.
They never established her again as a threat to then make it mean something when she did lose to, you know, like if she lost to Sasha or Charlotte or Becky or something, you know what I mean? Because it was just like, well, she's losing to everyone, so who cares? Whereas if she'd come in and lost to Asuka in that close match like they did, you know, which was awesome, and it was like, because at the time, Asuka was like undefeated as well, and it was like, well, shit, Mickey James nearly beat her, so she is pretty good. If she'd gone on then a bit of a streak kind of thing, and they'd built her up as like this veteran, she's come back, and, you know, she's still kicking ass and she's still like one of the best, and then beat a bunch of the new girls, and then it was like, oh shit, and then who's gonna finally beat her, and then that person would actually have gotten the rub. So whereas it was just like, oh, you beat you know, you beat the whoever beat Mickey James, it's like, yeah, they all beat Mickey James, so who cares, you know. It's like 2018 Mickey James, you didn't beat 2005 or whatever it was. Which is a shame, because I think it's funny because, like, the crowd at that Mania did definitely, like, quote unquote, turn against Trish. But I think it was, I don't even think it was more that they were against Trish. It was just that they were more for Mickey in that match. Because I think, like you said, like, she was a really good wrestler, but she was also like sexy enough, and also like her character was cool and sort of crazy enough for people to actually enjoy, you know what I mean? So she kind of ticked all the boxes, and it was like, yeah, there's Trish, like, okay, she's a great wrestler, she's hot, she's got a good character. It's like, yeah, but we've seen Trish, this is new. It's like that meme, you know, with the guy like looking at the girl walking past, you know, that meme they show all the time, and everyone they've made like 1,000 different versions of it, where the guy's like, well, what's over there? You know, like, it's just, it's
jealous, I think, girlfriend.
Yeah. And I think because the heel aspect as well, it was just like, oh, she sort of was becoming that cool heel, because it was like, oh, here's this like sexy chick that can wrestle, but she's doing all this like crazy shit. And everyone was like, oh, all right, she's cool. Yeah, cool. I like this match. Woohoo. And then the match was so good, people started cheering for her as well. But I don't think it was necessarily like turning on Trish for what Trish had done. You know what I mean? It was more they were just overly praising Mickey. I don't think. And then by default, then you boo Trish because, you know, they wanted to cheer for Mickey more. I mean, I don't know, that's sort of how I saw it, but it doesn't mean it's right.
it could have
been like, oh, Trish, you're boring, boo. I don't know.
I partially agree, but I also think there was a little bit of heat with Trish, not for anything she did, but I think it was a bit of a maybe John Cena effect at the time, where she'd just been, I guess, the top of the division for so long, and, you know, the audience were ready for something new, like a fresh face, and Mickey fit that role perfectly, you know? So I think it's like a combination of the two, to be honest.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, it is a bit of that John Cena, Hulk Hogan type of like, oh, here they come to win again.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like sometimes you just want to see, you know, like Bugs Bunny get fucking, you know, you want to see Elmer Fudd get him, you know what I mean? You want to see like the Wile E. Coyote like get the Roadrunner, you know what I mean?
Or
like,
get the Roadrunner, yeah.
One day Skeletor will win, you know, or something. It's just like, you know.
Fucking Bugs Bunny always kicks out at 2.
Yeah, he does.
so he's John Cena then.
Yeah.
Yeah, good
help. But yeah, that's my first pick. I think that she is a worthy pick as a jobber, as much as it pains me to call her one. But yeah.
Cool. Well, I'm going to jump in next, Steve, just because I'm pretty sure I don't think anyone will have this person on their list, because it's kind of like, he's a jobber, didn't really do much, but I was just like, yeah, but something about him when he came out, I was just like, yeah, here he comes, like, what a champion. Like, and it's WCW wrestler. He was a luchador, but like had to be the biggest of all of them because he wasn't some cruiserweight guy. And the perfect gimmick with the chair, good old La Parca.
La Parca, yeah. Nice. I don't think he ever actually won a match, did he?
I don't know. Oh, I remember he won a match one time when Russo had come in, and he beat Buff Bagwell. And in the match, they were trying to do that, like, is it a shoot? Is it, you know, like, are they breaking kayfabe kind of thing? And
Yep.
You know, like Bagwell came to the ring and he looked like someone had, you know, shit in his lunchbox and stuff. And he wasn't doing all the usual buff stuff. And then he was just sort of like going through the motions. And it was clear that he was like acting, that he was pissed off. And then at one point, like he dropped to his knee and he did like the pose as if like, yeah, I'm buff, you know. And he was turned around and he's like, come on then. Like, come on, get it over. As if like, come on, like kick me in the head sort of thing. And I'll lay down for you kind of thing. And so like La Parca does, he kicked him and pinned Bagwell. And of course, all the crowds like, what the fuck? And, you know, the commentators were like, oh my God, like La Parca beat Bagwell. Like, holy shit. You know, Bagwell's got up as if just like, yeah, like, you know, fuck this place. Like, I shouldn't have to lose to him. Like, they were trying to do that kind of like, as if like, oh, did you see that? Like, Bagwell didn't want to fucking lose. Like, it's like, yeah, but that was the, it was so obvious that it was like the script kind of thing.
Yeah.
But I remember that. But like, as far as like, quote unquote, proper matches go, I don't remember. I'm sure that he did win some, but I don't remember him ever sort of going over. But just this, like, who is this guy? He's like this weird skeleton faced like guy that dances with a chair. Like, what's going on with the weird shaky knees? And just like, oh, this guy's, he's so shit, he's awesome.
Yeah, I remember La Parca. He was so cool to watch. I totally agree. But yeah, he definitely falls into the category for sure. I think he even like the chair gimmick, I think that he didn't have that at first. And then once he got that, it's sort of like, yeah, you wanted to really see him to use the chair.
Yeah, he would do the little dance and stuff and it would just be like,
jump up on the chair. Yeah.
It's like one of those like weird shaped people as well. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
he was like a big guy, but he wasn't, he clearly wasn't like a Brock Lesnar type big guy, but he wasn't like a fat guy either. It was just like he wasn't like Samoa Joe either. You know what I mean? It was like just a weird, like skinny legs, but sort of, yeah, he looked like a big potato. I don't know. It was just weird.
Yeah. I think he's still wrestling now, I think, on the independent scenes, or he's probably just retired or something. Yeah.
Luchador guys.
I remember seeing they go forever.
Yeah.
I remember seeing a clip of him. He was at an independent show and he was sitting, he did some move in the crowd and he sat down on one of the chairs and some guy came from behind and tried to rip his mask off and he just turned around and clocked him in the face.
Oh yeah. Most of those guys are fucking legit ass because it's just,
oh yeah,
they all grew up with like, don't take your mask off and protect it. And, you know, wearing their masks like to the bar and all kinds of shit, you know, like just,
yeah.
So, but I do remember as well when there was a thing with where in the WCW when Russo was booking again and like La Parca would come out and like hold the microphone and it was clear that it wasn't him speaking. They would just play voice over the top and it was like, oh yeah, the Skull Man and all this kind of like weird fucking like radio DJ voice kind of thing. It was just like, oh, this is fucking great. Just because it was so shit, but it was like, ah, I love it. It's awesome. Like, we were like, why don't they make La Parca do more shit? Yeah. But yeah. I don't know, Stace, how much of La Parca you've seen. Well, not probably not a lot if you didn't see much WCW.
Yeah, I've seen absolutely nothing. I had no idea he existed until you mentioned him.
Showing our age group.
Yeah, yep. But I'm thinking maybe I have to do a little research on YouTube after this because sounds like a character.
I just looked him up. He's dead.
Oh, he's dead?
Yeah, died. He died last year, unless it's a different
La Parca. Steve was like, I think he's still wrestling now.
No, there was someone else called La Parca. He had to change his name to La Parca or something.
Oh, okay. I'm not sure
if it's actually him that died.
Oh.
If you do just La Parca, L.A., I think, I don't think he died because there was this thing going around saying it's not La Parca that died.
Oh, no, yeah, here we go. Yeah, no, he's just L.A. Yeah. Park now. There you go.
L.A. Park now, yeah, because it's something to do with his name. Yeah, you look at the picture of him on Wikipedia. Yeah.
Fucking great.
Yeah.
Like, that's just, yeah, it's like a bad 80s metal. Like a Gwar cover band or something. Like, it's just like,
yeah.
Shout out, listeners, if anyone knows who Guar is.
Oh, on January the 13th, 2021, LA Park, along with his son, Eligio de LA Park, won the MLW World Tag Team Championship. So he's still wrestling.
There you go.
Good for them.
Yeah.
Far out.
But yeah.
How old? He'd be 60.
He'd have to be, yeah, mid-50s.
55. He's 55.
Yeah.
Wow, good on him. Just I didn't realize he was so young when he was in WCW. I thought he was a bit older.
Yeah, that means he would have only been like, what, late 20s? Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Wow.
Never give up on your dreams.
No, kids, no,
you can
that's right.
Go after the tag titles at 55.
That's right.
Well, look, Greg, we're the same age as DDP when he made his run, so you never know.
That's right, exactly right.
That's right.
I'm more broken now than DDP is today, I think. So.
Yep, no, I agree.
I need that some of that yoga, brother.
Yeah.
Yes. 83 yoga.
83.
Get a phone call from DDP.
Grab your bourbon, take a drink.
That's right. Bloody oath.
Pick up your pen.
Yep.
If you can find it.
I've got it right here. Look. All right. Well, yeah, I didn't have a lot to say about La Parga, but just he was awesome, I thought. And for jobbers and guys that would just come out and lose, it was like he was always entertaining because it was just like, look at him. He's weird looking. He dances and. Why is he a skeleton? I don't know, but it's cool. So, you know, and he'd lose to like Billy Kidman and Chavo and whoever else, Rey Mysterio and that. Yeah. It was just like, it was entertaining. So, yeah.
Very.
But all right, Steve, who do you have for
choice? I've got a guy that Stacey probably doesn't know either. He bounced around from WCW to WWF, back to WCW. I'm talking about Barry Horowitz. He was one of the perennial jobbers. No matter where he went, he was the enhancement talent basically back in the day. But he was a little bit different. Whereas the crowd actually got behind him, and he actually had a match against Jeff Jarrett for the IC title in his career, and he actually had a couple of tag team title matches too with various partners. But the biggest thing that stands out for me is that Barry Horowitz kept losing. He was losing everything. And they made this whole big storyline out of it. And then I don't know if you remember the Body Donners. They he got into a feud with one of those, Body Donner Skip. And he got his first pinfall victory on TV in the WWF. Which led to a couple more victories, but after that it sort of faded away into like being the jobber again. But he was just the type of guy that you knew he was going to lose. He was the, like I said before, he's a jobber's jobber. He's the man, you know, if he was on TV back in the old Wrestling Challenge days or Superstars of Wrestling, you just knew whoever he was against, he was going to lose. But yeah, the crowd actually started cheering for him and wanted to see him win, and he got that victory. But sort of faded off into obscurity again.
Yeah, that's one that like I don't remember a huge amount or have too much knowledge of. But it's one of those names where you're like, oh yeah, know the guy, know the name. But yeah, not a huge amount of the details. To back it up, but I mean, yeah, it is definitely one of those names where it's just like, oh, I don't want to say him because we might have him on the list, but like this guy and that guy and this guy and Barry Horowitz, and you're like, oh yeah, like old school, and like a lot of the old guys bring him up too, you know, like you hear interviews with Flair and like Greg the Hammer Valentine and even people like what was his name? Like Honky Tonk Man and Jake Roberts and these guys, you know, even Nash. Like I've heard Nash talk about him and stuff. So
yeah. He was well liked because
they
knew that he was going to put on a match for them. Like they knew he was going to do the job and he was going to make the other guy look good.
Yeah, that's it. So they're like, cool. You know, like Barry's making me look like $1 million. Fantastic.
Yeah.
So yeah. But yeah, Stace, I'd be interested to hear if you had any like thoughts on Barry Horowitz, because like he's like way, way back as far as like,
yeah.
Yep. Yep. Once again, I have nothing to contribute. When you guys talk about WCW, I should just go sit in the corner.
Oh, he was WWF predominantly. Yeah. Do you think, sorry, just off tangent a little bit, like the jobbers that Greg and I used to watch, I guess, you don't really have them these days because you don't have those TV shows like Superstars and Wrestling Challenge and all that where it's just Raw or SmackDown, you know, like, I suppose you could consider some of the 205 Live guys jobbers, I guess. But
oh, there's AEW. There's AEW. It's full of jobs.
There's AEW, I just don't think they have those types of enhancement talent anymore. I think it's like, oh, you've got the IC title. You can lose to whoever now. You know?
Yeah, it's so too much because now it's all 50-50 booking. So
yeah.
No one's really a jobber, but no one's really a fucking over champion either because it's like, you know, nobody goes for 6 months without losing. Or if they do, it's only really a couple of people.
Yeah.
You don't really see what we had sort of during the Attitude Era and I guess a little bit beyond when you just have like the local competitor in like the plain blue ring tights, you know, just the most basic name ever. Don't really see that anymore.
You wouldn't have had Matt and Jeff Hardy if you didn't have it. You know what I mean? Like, the last time I can remember something like that was when, remember when that fuckwit Ryback was having those matches against 2 and 3 people, and it was all those enhancement talent. That's the last time I can remember, and that was years ago.
I liked Ryback. I thought he was good.
Did you see? You put out a poll on Twitter to see where he should go next. Everyone said retire. And he goes, all right, now all you guys have had your, all you idiots have had your say. I'm putting out a real poll. And he did it. And they all said retire again.
Did he actually put retirement as an option to vote for?
No, everyone just wrote retirement. Everyone just said it. Retire.
Like I thought when he was coming through and they made him a big deal, I was like he was winning and just crushing people, and I was like, this guy's fucking cool, because it was just like
they fucked it up,
you know? But then once they put him against Punk, I was like, oh, you've ruined it now, because you can't have him beat Punk, and then as soon as Punk beats him, it's like they should never have put him in that match with Punk. He should have just continued
then
to
they
just,
had fucking, you know, Brad Maddox low blow him, didn't they? I mean, what the fuck?
Yeah, and things like that. And it was just like, okay. Like they didn't even screw him out of the loop, like out of the win. Like it was like, because everyone compared him to Goldberg, and it's like, oh yeah, but Goldberg eventually lost. It's like, yeah, but he got fucking attacked by Bam Bam Bigelow, and then he got fucking like tasered by Scott Hall, and then powerbombed by Kevin Nash. It's like, yeah, so
that's okay, right.
And then he still kicked out at 3.5. So, like, because it was like 1, 2, 3, and then he did this sort of half kick. Like, so, unless I'm thinking of a different match, but like, it's not like, you know, like they didn't just, I don't know, like, didn't just hit him in the balls and pin him. It was like, well,
yeah,
you know, so, it was like quote unquote believable that, you know, that he, after taking all that, okay, he would lose. Whereas, yeah, Ryback, it was like a low blow and then a quick whatever it was that Punk did to him, and it was like, oh, he lost. Okay. Like, so in a cage as well. And it was just like, fuck, like there's no way out of this. Like, what are you going to do? And they just wrecked it. But yeah, Horowitz, at least, like, to get back on track, at least, like you said, he was that classic, like, turn up, lose, and because you're not the star, you're there to enhance the star. So, yeah. Good pick, I think. Yeah. So, I guess, Stace, you can bring us back to the, you know, something a bit more modern, I guess.
It's definitely more modern, but now I'm overthinking my picks and I'm thinking, like, I haven't picked someone who is enough of a jobber to be considered a jobber.
Okay.
Look, it's totally your take, but Stace, it's not, you know, I mean, it's your opinion.
Nevertheless, I'm going to stand by this pick because
Having said that, let me just help. This might help you feel better about it, Stace. I don't know. Maybe. Okay. Who knows? If we're going on simple wins and losses and things like that, I think it's more like their role in the company and what mm-hmm. Steve said before, were they enhancement talent? Because, I mean, technically, do you class someone like Ric Flair as a jobber? Because Flair lost to everyone all the time. Like, yeah, he's got the most titles, but that means he won 16 matches, you know, but
didn't Rob Van Dam say, so you've won the title 16 times, so it means you've lost it 17 times.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And Flair always says, like, he's like, he lost to everybody, like everyone's beating Flair. So, but no one would ever say Ric Flair was a jobber. So I don't think necessarily comes out. Like someone like Kane, for instance, I think has got like the most losses in WWF ever. Or something like that. But like, I don't think you ever say that Kane was a jobber. So,
no,
I agree.
I don't know. But so, yeah, I don't know if that helps or not. But yeah.
Yeah.
And like we said, it doesn't really matter. It's just what you think. So, yeah.
Yeah. So this pick is definitely more of a jobber than Mickey James, but less of a jobber than Le Parker. So I stand by this pick, and he has to be my favorite, if you would call him jobber ever, because I just love to watch him, and it's the Hurricane.
I'd go with that. I'd say he's a jobber. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it wasn't like the first thing that came to mind, but when I really sat down and thought about it, I was like, yeah, I think the Hurricane could be treated as a jobber. I mean, yeah,
I would go with that. I don't think that's a stretch at all. Like, he did have a big character, but it was definitely like, here he comes, and he's too overconfident in his ability, and he loses.
Yeah. Like, he had so, like, his role in like every Royal Rumble he was involved in was getting like eliminated in a couple seconds. You know, like I don't know what constitutes a jobber much more than that. But he just had a lot more personality than your regular jobber, that's for sure. And, you know, like Mickey James, he held a few belts in his time, but he's definitely lost more matches than he's won, and was predominantly used sort of as a punchline to put over other stars. The reason he makes my top three, even though I know he would lose 9 out of 10 matches, I would always root for him, just because he's just the kind of underdog that you get behind. You know, he's fun to watch, and he's a good wrestler. Like, he's a really good wrestler.
Oh yeah.
You know, he trained with Matt and Jeff Hardy. So the thing is, to me, most jobbers aren't that exciting or memorable, but even in the squash matches, Hurricane stood out. His gimmick was one of a kind, and his smaller stature made him very agile in the ring. He was moved quite quickly. I mean, he's technically a cruiserweight, but he just didn't really have a cruiserweight division at the time, at least for the most part of his career. And when you think about it, he was really ahead of his time sort of with this gimmick, because society is really embracing nerd culture these days, and superhero films pretty much topping the box office. And it makes you kind of wonder if things would have been different if he had been around now, you know? Like, I don't think he would ever be world champion, but I think he would have done pretty well for himself. But yeah, I don't think he was ever made to be the guy, especially given he wrestled for WWE and WWF for a really long time. And, you know, we saw some of the biggest stars in the company in that time. So it was a huge talent pool. And, you know, some wrestlers, unfortunately, are bound to miss out on the spotlight. But I think the Hurricane was special. I think he is one of the best jobbers ever, if you can call him that. And, you know, The Rock saw something in this guy. The Rock put him over.
Mm.
Yeah.
And that was even after The Rock, you know, had done his time in WWE. That was when he returned with his Hollywood Rock gimmick.
Yeah.
You know, I think that says something for how special the Hurricane was.
Yeah, yeah. He was in, before he was the Hurricane, he was in a jobber faction in Three Count. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
But when he came in and started doing Hurricane, when he was Hurricane Helms, and it was the when he was part of the Alliance, and I remember there was that thing where, you know, like Austin was the heel and he was, you know, giving him shit, being like, what's that tattoo, you know, like, oh, it's Green Lantern, what, you know, all that kind of shit. And who's Green Lantern, you know, and then he came out and like as this weird green superhero is going, it's like the Hurricane Helms. I'm like, what the fuck is this? And then but when he was like heel, like when he was Hurricane Helms as the heel, and but acting as like Superman, you know what I mean, like citizen, mm-hmm. I will show you the way, it was like, this guy's a heel, doesn't realize he's a heel. Like it was that Kurt Angle effect almost, you know. And like when he was doing all that shit and then like trying to choke slam the Big Show because he thought he was a fucking superhero and just shit, like I fucking loved all that shit. I thought this guy's fucking awesome. And then they turned him into a baby face and I was like, you're not meant to cheer for him because he's awesome. You're meant to be like, I like him because he's shit. Like don't turn him baby face. And then they gave him the green hair and he had a proper, it was different, you know, like once they dyed his hair and turned him face, it was like, but that.
And then he had Rosie as his superhero in training.
Yeah, all that shit. Then I was just like, I can't, it wasn't bad, but it lost something for me. But when he was that initial, when he first started and he was a heel, and he would be all that like, I'm the Hurricane, listen to me, citizen, do your part for society, and blah, blah, and then trying to act as if he was like some 6'8" guy and trying to do these power moves and that. And I was just like, what the fuck is he doing? This is great.
Yeah.
And then, but then, yeah, they turned him face and that kind of lost something for me. But he was awesome. He was still good.
He was. Also, I liked the clip of in the Royal Rumble when he tries to choke slam Austin and Triple H.
That's so cool. And that's testament to him as well, because like you said, Stace, like he worked with The Rock put him over, and that worked so well because he was a jobber. So for The Rock to lose to him, it was like, you know, Helms has shocked the world, you know.
What's up with that?
Yeah. But obviously they all enjoyed what he was doing and wanted to work with him, because no way Austin and Triple H would have done that in the Royal Rumble if they didn't want to. Like, we're not comedy actors, we're not fucking doing that. But clearly they were like, oh, this is cool. So, because he'll make us look good and it's funny, and when we kick him out, everyone will cheer because we got rid of the fucking dork, you know? Everybody, pretty much everyone worked with him. Like, I think he had a match with Undertaker at one point as well, I think, if I remember.
Yeah.
When he went Undertaker.
Yeah, I think he did.
Was the short haired, you know, Big Evil or whatever he was.
American Badass.
Yeah, yeah. So,
honestly, like the Hurricane's little stint with Hollywood Rock is one of my favorite things ever. Yeah. Like, it is such a memorable few. The backstage segments they had were absolutely gold. Like, they just bounced off each other perfectly, because obviously Hurricane was doing his Hurricane thing and The Rock was just kind of going off his Scorpion King fame, and they were kind of fighting about who was like a real superhero, and it was just great. And honestly, when The Rock put him over, I remember at the time thinking, like, wait, are they actually gonna like give Hurricane Helms a main event push, which they didn't, but they had me thinking for a moment that maybe they would.
It's a possibility, yeah, definitely.
It's like, oh, hang on a sec. Like, it was almost like, let's just see, like, what would happen. Because, I mean, obviously that was, I can't remember who was he feuding with. Rock was feuding with someone. Stone Cold? Well, I was going to say it was him or Goldberg. But
yeah, I think it was like his, so it was lead up to their last match at WrestleMania 19, where The Rock finally beat him.
Yeah.
So Hurricane won basically because Stone Cold came out and distracted.
That's right. Because Goldberg was then the next match after Mania. Yeah. So.
Yeah. I think it was like Raw after Mania, Goldberg debuted.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause that was when, cause Rock beat Austin finally. And then he was doing like that fake, like, I've done everything. There's nothing else for me to achieve. I've beaten everyone. I've beaten Austin and Triple H and everyone. Like, there's no one I've never beaten. And then it was like, and then here comes Goldberg, you know? So
that was some good TV back then.
Yeah. That's it.
Oh, yeah.
I always thought it was funny because, like, the whole, that was always weird to me because I, like, obviously it's all fake and fucking kayfabe and all that, but, like, the whole, like, who would win, Austin or Goldberg? It's like, well, my answer is always like, well, The Rock beat Steve Austin and clean, and a month later, Goldberg beat The Rock. So,
yeah.
In the world of kayfabe, does that mean that Goldberg would have beaten Austin clean? Like, in the world of, you know what I mean? In the make-believe world of wrestling. So,
not in Vince McMahon's head.
That's right. But yeah. So, you know. But no, I like that pick. I did not even think of Hurricane.
Yeah, me neither.
If I had, I think I would have put him on my list if it had occurred to me. So that's pick of the night so far, I think. Yeah, definitely.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to go for a guy that I'm sure even you know, Stacey, and he was such a jobber. He had a faction called the Job Squad.
Job Squad.
Everybody's favorite mannequin head wielding psychopath, Al Snow.
Classic.
Because, I mean, even Mick Foley would berate Al Snow in a lighthearted way, like in all these books, you know, like, oh, God, this was worse than an Al Snow match and things like that. But, I mean, they gave this guy who he Al Snow's actually a really good wrestler. It's just that they ended up, you know, I think he was in ECW and stuff, and then they brought him in and it was like, all right, what are we going to do with these guys? And it was him and Blue Meanie and Stevie Richards, all these guys, you know. So we'll make them like a job squad. That'll be funny, huh? Because that was around with the time when the internet was sort of like wrestling internet dirt sheets and people getting smartened up to like, oh, this is happening backstage, so expect this tonight. Like all that kind of shit was sort of, you know, really starting to become a serious thing. Where you could, if you wanted to know what was going to happen on the show tonight, you could probably find out. Whereas that had never really been the case in the 80s and stuff like that. So for him to then be saddled with this gimmick where he's this crazy person who talks to a mannequin head that has helped me written backwards, like it's so insane. You think like, oh, that's going to last 2 weeks, but he made a fucking whole career out of it. So I think if you actually go back and watch a lot of his matches, like they are entertaining as fuck because he is listening to the head the whole match.
Yeah. Yeah,
like as if the head is talking, like, oh, what? Oh, I'm gonna do that. Okay, you know, it was like the as if he was Rusev and the head was Lana, you know, how she when they first came out and she would be like, crush, you know, like that Rocky Four sort of amalgam that they were trying to do. But yeah, just the nature of it. And I mean, a few years ago when I went to see Tommy Dreamer's House of Hardcore. When Mick Foley was there and Bubba Ray Dudley was there and that, and a couple of Hornswoggle. but beautiful people were there, so that was interesting.
Very nice.
And I just that night, I got to tell you, like, not to make it a whole thing, but like standing 2 feet away from Velvet Sky and then looking to my right to see that Bubba Ray Dudley is standing next to her. And I just thought like, I'm like, dude, that thing has got to be like a foot long. I don't know what's going on.
And they're still together now too.
And it's just like, you must be one funny motherfucker. That's all I could think. But he was really nice. When I did get to meet him, and he was really cool. He was a nice guy. And I actually got to ask a question in the Q&A thing to him and Tommy. Him and Tommy Dreamer were in the ring doing the thing, and like they were awesome with the Q&A stuff. So, but
yeah,
Al Snow was a part of that as well. And he did all the stuff you would. The only difference was he had short hair now, because he's, you know, 50 odd or whatever. He cut his hair. He wasn't bald or anything. He just had short hair. But did all the stuff that you would expect Al Snow to do, and like it was amazing. It was great. Like it was the most entertained I'd ever been in an Al Snow match, and it was like we're up the Sunshine Coast, Queensland, Australia, in this little den place that has just, you know, usually has, it's like a pub that has bands in it and stuff, and yeah, like the biggest name in the building was Mick Foley, but he wasn't wrestling.
Yeah.
But yeah, it
is
was
that Aussie World.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. That's where UPW run their shows from.
Yeah, yeah. Luxford was there from IPW. He was there.
Fun fact about Al Snow: EC Diamond was trained by Al Snow when he went over to America.
Oh, nice. Yeah, yeah. But yeah, and the whole thing with him as well, I think he needs a lot of credit because he was heavily involved in a lot of the Tough Enough and that kind of stuff. So
yeah,
true. Yeah,
Tough Enough Tough Enough never really developed any major stars, really, apart from, I mean, you could say The Miz, because he was champ and everybody knows him, and he has been a wrestler for like 12 years or whatever. But it's not like they created the next Stone Cold or Rock or, you know, John Cena or anyone like that. But there have been plenty of people come through that have had good careers, and solid wrestling careers because of Tough Enough back in the day, and Al Snow was a big part of that. So,
That
I think that helps. But yeah, he was always entertaining, even just back in the day, you know, like it would, you know, what does everybody want? And it's like, oh, cool, here he comes. You know, like just craziness. Like back in the day, everyone's music was like, you had a hook and you knew who was coming out, and didn't matter what match was coming, it was entertaining. It wasn't just like, oh, this is only match three, so you just get John Jones and Jack Smith, like fucking who cares. It was everyone, like, for all the shit that Vince Russo gets for a lot of his booking, and a lot of it rightly so, like I don't think he can be faulted for saying, like, no, every wrestler needs a character and every character needs a story, and they put that in every match. Like, a lot of it was shit, but at least they were trying, whereas now they don't try. They just go, oh, you'll never be anything, so you just go out and lose and do nothing, do some flips, that'll do.
Yeah, I hate to be that person, you know, because we all know one that, like, you go and talk to a stranger at a bar, which you probably wouldn't do now because of COVID, but you would have done like 2 years ago. And I don't know, let's say wrestling comes up and, you know, they always say like, oh, it used to be so much better in the Attitude Era. It's just like the thing you say. Mm. And it's true. It was better, but people also forget the bad stuff. Like, they kind of look at it with like rose tinted glasses.
Yeah.
But that part is correct though, because the thing that made Attitude Era interesting was there were stars throughout the card, you know, from like the very low card, the mid card to the main event. And it made the show more interesting to watch from start to finish. And that's because of people like Al Snow, who jobbed for the most part, but they were still interesting to watch. I mean, Al Snow's had a lasting impression on me. Every time I pick up my mannequin head, I still go, what do we want? Head! And then, like, headbang it. And, yeah, that's why, like I was touching on before with the Hurricane, like, the best thing a jobber can do, aside from obviously their job, which is putting over a wrestler, but is be interesting to watch, you know, and having some personality. Mm-hmm. And Al Snow had a shit ton of that.
Yeah. And half the guys, like, at the moment, you could say, like, that are the quote unquote stars and they've won their matches and all that, they don't have an inkling of the fan reaction or character, like, charisma kind of thing that Al Snow had. And, like, you look back and you're like, yeah, he had more, he was more over, he had a better gimmick, he had a weird charisma about him, and he had good ring skills than half the guys on the roster today, but he's still only Al Snow. You know what I mean? It's not like, oh, the guys were way back then, like, Austin's way better than Roman and stuff. It's like, yeah, but it's Austin, like, you know, and it's Hogan and it's Warrior and Savage and Rock and all these, you know, Bret Hart. it's tough to say, like, oh yeah, well, you know, they're not as good as AJ Styles. Like, Bret Hart was way better than AJ Styles, or Ric Flair, you know, like, he's so much better than whoever, you know, Bray Wyatt or Brock Lesnar or whatever you want to say, whichever star you want to pick. But, like, yeah, like, if it's almost like if Al Snow from then suddenly transported to today, he'd probably be a much bigger star just because of, you know, well, they would never do that gimmick now, but no. If they did, yeah, it's weird to say, but yeah, it's like, so even a guy with as much sort of talent and all that he had, like, funneled through the right prism, don't get me wrong, with the mannequin head and the gimmick and the theme song and all that, but like, it was still a highlight of the show, and he was just a jobber, yeah, coming out to put over, like you said, Jeff Hardy or Christian or someone like that. So
you can pretty much thank Paul Heyman for that mannequin head.
Really?
Back in ECW, yeah. It was something, I can't remember the whole story, but what happened was they found a dumpster full of old mannequin heads, and they grabbed them and then gave them out to the fans at the arena, ECW arena, one night. And for some reason, I don't know how or why, and during the Al Snow match, they all just threw those mannequin heads in the ring. Okay. And yeah, that's how he started. That's how he started with a mannequin head.
Oh, cool.
Just something like that, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, no, Al Snow was the first person I thought of when we were going through the
wow,
through a list of jobbers and stuff, where I was like, who can I? Who was a jobber that I thought was cool? And I was like, oh, Al Snow. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
And then I had to think about it. And yeah. So, but all right, Steve, you had Barry Horowitz for number one. Who takes the second place on your list?
Oh, for me, there's one. Dwayne Gill.
Ah, nice.
Gilbert. it's weird also, like, obviously he beat Christian for the light heavyweight title.
Yeah.
Christian, of all people.
The streak is over.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. He beat Christian. And then after that, he went on to do the Goldberg gimmick throughout the Attitude Era, obviously, as a parody to Goldberg in WCW. But Goldberg was on a 170-something win streak or whatever?
174, I think it was. Like,
174?
I think.
So what they decided to do was they were going to make Goldberg lose 174 matches.
And instead of Vince McMahon.
Yeah. Yeah. Goldberg's catchphrase was, who's next? Well, Goldberg's catchphrase was, who's first? He also, you know, Goldberg would come out with the security guards, the big pyro. He'd come out with like fire extinguishers being blown up near him and little fucking sparklers, you know, following to the ring.
And just
basically he. Yep.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, I'm just saying he's. Just like Dwayne Gill, like, obviously not many people would know who Dwayne Gill is, but they would know who Goldberg is. But I just think as he's probably one of the most well known jobbers through different generations of people, I guess. He never really was relevant as such, and he was just lucky that he got to get the Goldberg gimmick to make a living out of. And he still comes out now. I mean, you talk about the Rock and Goldberg meeting. Goldberg came out then too, and he got beat up by Goldberg. And then, you know, he came out a couple of years ago. He came back a couple of years ago, 2016, on the Edge and Christian show. And, he got attacked by Kevin Owens. So, you know, it's the sort of thing that people still remember. Yeah, he was always a jobber.
Yeah.
You got to hand it to him. He's made a whole career off that gimmick, ripping off Goldberg.
Yeah.
You know? He's like, you know, he can put a roof over his family's head for that.
Yeah.
Yeah, he'd be like, thank you, Eric Bischoff. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Lots of guys, you know, shit on Bischoff and can't stand him and stuff, but he's probably like, oh, thank Christ you made Goldberg, because then I got to be Gilbert. So.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
And again,
you know, when we're talking about doing this list, you said you thought Al Snow straight away. Oh, I thought Gilbert straight away.
Yeah. After Al Snow, I did think of Gilbert, and there was one other person, but it's that attitude error of like, oh, okay, here comes a guy that's just going to get flogged in like 30 seconds, but like, it's funny because they're taking the piss out of Goldberg, and there was nothing against Goldberg. It wasn't like, yeah, good, fuck him. It was just funny because it was like, look at this scrawny dude doing all the Goldberg like flexing and you know, the tongue out and blah and all that shit. And there's like the pyro and then he just gets flogged. It was great.
He was in the job squad too at first with Al Snow.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
As Dwayne Gill before he became Gilbert.
Yeah, there you go. I didn't realize that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So no, good old Gilbert. And that's right, because they'd have the fake chants then too, remember?
They'd pipe it in. Much like they do today.
Yeah.
The fake cheers.
They're like, we could do this all the time. It'd be great.
Yes. I didn't get to watch Raw from Chicago, but it would have been interesting to see what it was like last week.
Oh, I didn't watch it either.
No.
Especially after Bray Wyatt got released. I think there would have been a lot of people.
Yeah, someone had him on. someone had him on his overrated list that we did on 83 a while ago.
Yeah,
cut down, Greg.
I knew that guy was, but pretty fucking smart. Yes. I think.
Apparently, he's got one of the best minds for creative. I didn't realize that.
Mm.
A lot of people were talking him up with his creative visions and stuff.
Oh, I think for sure that definitely a case of like, what we got and like the reason, my reasons for like, he's overrated, blah, blah, blah. I'm sure it wasn't. That's not what it was never. I don't think we ever saw exactly what he wanted to do. It was just
exactly. Yeah. You know, yeah.
So who knows? But now we're going to AEW and be the biggest thing ever.
Well, he's trademarked the term, the cult of Wyndham.
So
he's still going to have the same sort of character. But he'll be called Wyndham Rotunda, whatever his name is. But there's rumors that because he's good friends with Braun Strowman, there's rumors that he could be going on there too. So that'll be interesting.
Well, that'd be all right. I mean, I just laugh and they're like, now you go AEW and realize his full potential and lose to Cody.
Yeah. Well, Daniel Bryan and CM Punk are going there, so you know, you never know.
Yeah, of course.
Never know what'll happen. Mm-hmm. Who will turn up? Who's the third man?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Happy birthday to Hulk Hogan too, eh? I thought you would have got that in already, Greg.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it's Hogan's birthday.
Yeah. His birthday, yeah.
Yeah.
Is that his 100th? 100th birthday?
He's 947 years old.
I tell you what, there won't be any black people at his birthday party.
Jesus.
Oh, man.
Happy birthday, Terry.
Yeah, good job, Terry.
Oh, my gosh. I just fact-checked it. He's turning 69.
69.
There you go.
Wow.
Like, well, let me tell you something, brother. When you turn 69.
Oh shit!
I've been to the top of the mountain.
Is anyone still listening?
Yeah,
Hulk Hogan will listen now. He'll be like, "There's one guy."
Oh yeah, I got mentioned.
Yeah, that's right. I'll tell you, Kevin Smith isn't listening. I'll tell you that.
He should be.
Check out the last Unfunny Nerd Tangent for all those details. All right, so Stace, unless you're going to have Hulk Hogan on your list, I'm assuming you've got someone else in mind for, it's his birthday. Why don't you put Terry on the list? Come on.
Yeah.
He lost to someone.
I don't think he was a jobber, mate. I just don't think.
His hair jobbed out pretty quick.
He jobbed out to Jeff Jarrett. There you go.
He stood on Jeff Jarrett.
It's a birthday gift to not include Terry on this list. basically.
All right, yeah, there you go. That's as much as you get.
Exactly. Yeah. That's all I'm giving him.
Yeah. Stacey's appreciation for Terry Hogan. For Hulk Hogan
you're
is.
You're not a jobber.
Oh, you're not a jobber. All right. There you go.
Yeah. Yeah. That's all I'm giving you, Terry. So, my third pick. I'm feeling a little bit torn now because I had my picks all settled on and I thought of someone else just before we started the show. But I'm going to stick with my pick and I'm just going to mention that other person in our honorable mentions. So my third pick is Damian Sandow.
Ooh.
Okay. Yeah.
Yep.
Oh,
go on.
No, you're right. I was going to say, yeah, no, that's okay. Yeah, you go.
All right, we'll swing back to you. But Damian Sandow is definitely one of my favorite quote-unquote jobbers of, I guess, like the last 10 years ish. One thing I found out when I was basically doing my homework for this one was Damian Sandow debuted under a different name in 2002 on Sunday Night Heat. You know that?
Really? No.
Yeah, that's crazy. Wow. So by the time that he actually was repackaged and debuted as Damian Sandow was 2012. That's 10 years later.
Shit.
Yeah, that is mental. Anyway, Damian Sandow, obviously his kind of claim to fame, if you could call it that, was his intellectual savior gimmick. You know,
so good. Kind of, I loved it.
Oh, yeah, he was great. You know, came out like wearing this kind of Ric Flair, Bobby Roode kind of robe, and you know, he just shat on the crowd every time he came out. You know, classic heel thing, but he is so good on the microphone. He has so much charisma. I actually found out again doing my homework that he's an actor as well, which explains a lot because he was really good at what he did as far as like character work goes. And yeah, I guess I'm sort of driving the point home that my favorite kind of jobbers are the ones that are entertaining to watch and are memorable. And regardless of what Sandow was doing, he was pretty much always memorable to me, whether it was the intellectual savior gimmick. There was like, he sort of fell into this weird gimmick where he was just impersonating famous people.
And that was that, awesome.
That then slid into the Mizdow, the Damian Mizdow gimmick, which was honestly like one of the funniest things I've ever seen on television. If you happen to have not seen it, basically, Damian Sandow was Miz's stunt double, and probably the best thing was during his matches, like he would be at ringside and he would sort of be performing the moves to no one at ringside and also selling to no one. And it was just absolutely gold. And it makes me really sad that he didn't get a bit more of a push because it seemed like they were going to. He won the Money in the Bank briefcase like a year after he debuted as Damian Sandow. Obviously they saw something in him, but I don't know what changed for them because he was actually the first Money in the Bank briefcase holder that lost, like cashed in and lost.
Mm.
Yeah, like that would be devastating for him, you know, to be the first guy to lose that, you know.
Do you remember when he teamed up with was it Curtis Axel? And they was he was Ooh. Macho Mandow. Do you remember that?
Yeah. Oh yes, I remember that.
Do you remember who Curtis Axel was pretending to be?
Dad.
Brother.
Yeah, Mr. Perfect.
No, they were the Meta Powers, remember? They weren't the mega powers. Yeah. They were the meta powers. And old mate was doing the Hogan thing, and then Hogan's tape leaked, and they were like, "Well, kill that gimmick."
There you go, Stacey. Greg got Hogan in there.
Yay. He
got
Hogan. Happy 69th birthday, Terry.
Yeah, I looked it up. He's only 68. I don't know what the.
I wish. I wish I wish Chris Benoit a happy birthday.
It's probably going by American time. So if it's his birthday here in Australia, it's not born in America until tomorrow.
Born in 1953.
There you go.
Well, what I looked at anyway. I don't know. It's probably Hogan's website. I'm only 23, brother. I'm in my prime. I got 5 more fucking main events in me. I just don't want to work with Kofi.
Can we just make sure to do a show this time next year so we can revisit it when Terry actually turns 69?
Yeah, we might be on episode 69 by then.
Yeah, we'll just hold off doing a show for 6 months if it means we can do it on Terry's 69th birthday.
Yep, that'll be, yep. How do you put 83 top 3 Hogan somethings?
Yeah, top 3 Hogan screwovers.
Yeah, controversies.
Oh, jeez.
3 words Hogan should never have said. It's like, yep. Whoops. Oh, well, Terry. Happy birthday. Sandow, he was awesome. Very much like Hurricane Helms, where he had like that weird gimmick. And I'm like, love this guy. It's great. Like,
yeah.
What are they doing with him? And then, that was just like, oh, fuck. Like, even when he was with, and you know how much I love Cody Rhodes, but like, even when they were a team and they were the Rhodes Scholars. That was cool. And then they split and they were fighting over the Money in the Bank thing. And like, it went in the ocean and they were fucking drowning each other and shit. Like, that was cool. That's when I was like, yeah, Cody's all right. Like, he's got a place. It's just then all of a sudden, someone whispered in his ear, like, that he's, better than Triple H. And it's just like, sure.
Oh, God.
But yeah, Sandow, champion. Like, that is one of the major, major fucking misses that, like, everybody says that now. Yeah. Oh, they dropped the ball with fucking, what's his name? Tommy End or whatever it was, Aleister Black. They dropped the ball with Aleister Black. And what about Keith Lee? They should have made him a star. And like, fuck it. But like, and to a degree, whatever. But like, Sandow, definitely. Like,
he was ready made. He was already there,
And they had it the so, crowd they had it, fuck, it was just sitting there. Like, they did all that Miz Dow shit where he was Miz's stunt double. And then he was getting cheered and he was over as his baby face. And then he turned on Miz, and threw Miz out of the battle royale and all this. And it was like, yay, finally. Like, he had his like Virgil DiBiase moment kind of thing, where like the downtrodden servant guy, like, turns against the fucking rich boss kind of thing. And then it was like, yeah, all these people love him. If he had then the next night gone straight back to that fucking like intellectual savior gimmick and just shit on everybody, like, fuck, they would have hated him. They would have just booed the fuck out of him. And he would have been like this biggest heel and just, you could put him with anyone because they would have just booed the shit out of him. Like, he would have had so much heat, I reckon, if they had just timed that right. Like, build him. You love him. You really love him now. And then turn and then, oh, fuck. And that would have just,
it would have been perfect.
Yeah. He would have got
who,
like,
who did he cash in on?
Cena.
That's a good question.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Cena. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, it was Cena busted his ass. Punk or someone attacked Cena, or it was Punk or Orton or someone like that, and they fucked up Cena's arm, and it was all like, oh, he's got a broken arm. And then Sandow tried to cash in, and Cena still won. I was just like, fuck.
Yeah.
Bullshit.
I would also just like to revisit one of my favorite Damien Sandow moments when he shit on Randy Orton and sang his theme song. That's a... I'm pretty sure we put that in an old AT3 episode.
Yeah,
I think we have. Yeah.
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 Well, by we, I mean Greg.
Yeah. yeah. We can't take the credit for that.
No, we didn't take that at all. No.
It takes a while, cut and then paste. It's, yeah. But yeah, I think it was in the underrated. Did we do underrated? Or maybe overrated? I don't think we've done underrated, have we?
I can't even tell you what show that was.
Mm,
no. Just go back and listen to all of them, kids.
They're all so good. I just can't choose between them.
Can't choose which one. Exactly. And look, I guarantee you there'll be a Benoit mention, a Hogan mention. You want it, you got it.
Paige, Brad Maddox.
Paige, Maddox, Woods. Paige.
Oh, well, I was going to say maybe Paige.
Is Paige a good jobber or what? I don't know.
Oh, shit. I was going to say maybe she'll get episode 69. I don't know.
She's already done that. She already had that.
Yeah. We've done it. Yeah.
No, we're reserving that one. For
are you looking up Paige, are you, Greg?
No, I'm scrolling down to my next pick.
Because I can send you the link now if you like.
Yeah. Steve's got it bookmarked.
Yeah. Well, someone who isn't Damien Sandow, definitely. But I still had to pick him because, I don't know, it's a weird gimmick. It was like he was – this is another one. This is the one I had where I'm like, is he a jobber? Like, yeah, because, I mean, like he won his first match, and then which was a big deal. But then pretty much lost to everybody. But anyway, so I went with Santino Marella. Because it was like
definitely a jobber.
Yeah. But like his first match, he won the Intercontinental Championship. So that's where I was like, but it was kind of as a joke kind of thing, I guess. So
yeah. Because Lashley came out and got him Marga, and then he ended up pinning him, didn't he?
Yeah. But I went with Santino because I thought, like, I mean, don't get me wrong, even I liked Santino, but it did get old. So. I'm over this. But at the time, like in that sort of, there was probably a good, I think maybe 18 months, 2 years where it was like, all right, yeah, he's pretty funny. And you know, like where he was just, he'd get the people's names wrong and just mixed, well, not wrong, but just, you know, like, what do you call him? John Cena. That was always funny. John Cha, I will beat you, John Cena, you know, all this kind of shit, which is funny because he's John Cena is not, like, it's actually, his name is Cena. It should be Cena. Like, that's actually correct. Like, it's Italian for, it's like dinner or, you know, meal kind of thing. Like, so, like, it is an Italian, it is actually Cena, but of course, America, it's, you know, it's John Cena, you know. So that was always funny, but I always liked whenever it was Triple H and it was like Triple Hachi or whatever he'd call it. It was like, okay, like, I don't have time to talk to you now, Triple Hachi. I've got to, and it was like, what the fuck? So I liked the Lechi, but again, see, I liked heel Santino. It was the same as like Hurricane Helms. Like, he had to be a heel. Like, once he was a babyface, I was just like, who gives a fuck? Like, you're not supposed to, he's not the underdog. You're supposed to boo him because he's like this little slimy piece of shit that's sneaking around, but he thinks he's a hero, you know. So yeah, I thought it was good, but when they started to bring in the Cobra and it was, you know, it was basically like Mr. Socko 2.0, I thought that was a bit shit. And like where he won the women's Battle Royale or whatever it was, as Santino and shit. It was like, that's just, I like, I get it. Okay, yeah, it's good, but like,
Just shat on all the other women. But you know what I mean?
It was like, old mate. Who was the guy with no chin that helped Carmella win the
Ellsworth?
It was a bit like that. Where it was just kind of like, look, I get it. It's a good heat magnet thing, but it was just sort of dumb. But yeah, Santino, when he first was sort of that heel character and just ripping into people, there's a clip where he's in the ring with a whole bunch of other people and he's tearing into Regal and or a bunch of people, but it's like, and it's one of the few times that you can see where like Randy Orton is trying not to laugh. Like, he's like looking away and burying his head in his, you know, under his arm and things like that. And I mean, that's Randy Orton, who's, you know, from all accounts, one of the most miserable people on the fucking planet. So even he was like trying not to laugh at shit Santino was doing, you know. I just remember him giving shit to Regal and it was like, you know, he said something to him like, oh, blah, 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 like whatever, sick burn, you know, and he's like, I hope you're in a restaurant, William Regal, because you just got served. Like, and it was just like, what the fuck? Like, it was so stupid. But like, yeah, and again, he was another one where like at one point it looked like he was almost going to win the Royal Rumble, because when Del Rio won it that year, because they knocked Santino out of the thing, and then you know, Del Rio's dancing around, and then Santino climbs back into the ring, and it's like, that's right, Santino didn't get eliminated. And of course the crowd was then, you know, it was Roman Reigns versus Batista, where all of a sudden everybody wanted Roman Reigns to win the Royal Rumble. You know, all of a sudden people were like, fuck yeah, like Santino is going to win the Rumble and beat Del Rio. And I was like, yeah, you know, like nobody actually thought that, but you know, for 5 seconds in their brain, people wanted it.
You know, it's funny, but because I thought Del Rio only likes beating women, not men. So,
yeah. Yeah, well, he's got the Santina loophole. He's like, oh,
yeah, true,
well.
True, very true. Yeah. Yes, yes.
But yeah, like I just thought, like for the entertainment value early on, much like Hurricane Helms, like I didn't think of it. Like I said, I didn't even think of Hurricane Helms before this list, but. Now I realize why I gravitated towards Santino early on, because he had that same kind of, it was a different gimmick, but it was a similar kind of act where it was like, he's not a hero, but he kind of is sort of, you know, dicking around like one, but he's a bad guy. So,
yeah.
I feel like Santino is like something, I might be completely wrong, but I feel like it's something from the mind of Vince McMahon, who is very racist, and if you're not like all American, it's like, okay, let's turn it up to 10 and give him like one eyebrow, and you know, make his English bit broken.
It's weird because he's like Canadian or something anyway. That's like,
so, yeah,
yeah.
I don't know if he actually is Italian. Like, I know, obviously, I was gonna say he speaks with American accent, but Canadian accent, I guess. But yeah, and the thing I don't understand with it, like that never really hit well with me, is they just, like I said before, the kind of his gimmick started off like that, but then they just went more and more intense with it. Like, I'm not going to forget the fact that he had two eyebrows for like the first 2 years he was on television, and then suddenly he had one eyebrow.
Yeah.
Like, it was just stupid. And I suppose it was meant to be stupid, and some of it hit well with me, others didn't. Like, I guess his power walk to the ring was pretty funny. And I honestly completely forgot about like the mispronouncing wrestlers' names, yeah. But I hated the Santina thing. I absolutely hated
Me too. Yeah.
The shit he did with Emma early was
quite funny. Oh, that was too. Good. Yeah.
Yeah, that was good. Yeah. Yeah,
where it was just like, no, do it like this. And it was just like when she had the goofy dork gimmick.
She was the clumsy. Yes. Yeah, that's right.
So.
Oh, look, the Cobra was okay at first, but then obviously it's like, no, what, put it away.
Once they turn it into like magic, that's when all that shit just gets fucking, you know, like,
yeah.
Oh my God. Like, it's, you know, they had one thing and it was like, I mean, it must have been a Rumble or whatever. Foley was there and it was, you know, Mr. Socko and against the Cobra, and they're acting. It was like fucking Harry Potter, like shaking their wands at each other. You know what I mean? It was like the power, like your power's overtaking mine, and now back and forth. I'm like, for fuck's sakes, two dudes with socks on their fucking hands, like just punch him in the face, like, you know, like,
yeah,
you know, but and like, I get it, it's just fucking stupid wrestling and that, but it was just like, oh man, like he could have been like a. Like that you could tell early on they thought they had like the next Honky Tonk Man on their hands, because he was doing that. He was doing the, like, I'm going to break the Honky Tonk Man's record for Intercontinental title reign kind of thing. And they would do like, it's week 22 and it's week 23. And they had his face in the numbers and all that kind of shit. And like, he didn't have that gimmick, but he had that. You could tell that's where they were sort of going with it. And then once the worst thing for him is he started to get over as kind of a face, kind of, because people were cheering him because he was so good at what he was doing. they turned him face, and then it was like, oh, okay, well, now he has to be a good guy. So now he's a cartoon character. Like, he's a he's a good guy cartoon character as opposed to this larger-than-life wrestling character, you know? And it just became... Then it became, oh, Santino's for the kids. Whereas he wasn't real. Like, he wasn't like risque or anything, but I wouldn't, when he first started and he had that heel persona, but I wouldn't say he was for the kids.
True.
But yeah.
And he was a, he's a legit fighter too, because he I think it was judo or something. So he could legit fight.
He's an actual, tough guy.
Yeah. It's annoying when they do shit like that. Like, the guy can actually wrestle. He can go in the ring, yet they make it all about the... And I know everyone's got to have a character. I totally get that. But that was just a bit... It was just a waste. Yeah.
They go too far with it. It's like, they go to... You can't just go like, oh, he's good at that. He could do that for... every now and then, like every few... A pay-per-view, he could pull the sock out and do like the Cobra thing. It's like, he'll do that every match. Like, oh, fuck.
Every night. Not even in a match, just in a segment.
And they all do the same, like the five-knuckle shuffle, all that kind of stuff. It all became the same. You know, you can't see me. It was like, here's five moves a day. Like, it was just, well, that's what he does. It's like, but if you just do it every now and then, it was... You know, like The Rock originally, like The Rock didn't do the people's elbow every time.
No.
You know, a lot of time it was rock bottom, 1, 2, 3. Yeah. And then it was, if you really wanted to get heat, he'd do the fucking, and that's, you know, the people's elbow. And that's what it always go. You'd never beat anyone with that move. It's like, no, that's the point. He's already beaten them. And to be a dick, he's going to just fucking jump around like a clown and drop this elbow, which wouldn't hurt the guy anyway. But he's already beaten him, so he pins him and it embarrasses the guy. But then it became like the most electrifying move in sports entertainment. And, you know, like they talk about, like, he beat Hogan in the match and clean, which is one of the biggest things you could ever do as a wrestler ever. And after, I think it was 2 or 3 rock bottoms, but they always say the thing that put Hogan away was a people's elbow. It's like, fuck's sake. Like, it's, you know what I mean? Like, as a babyface Rock as well. Yeah. And it's like, you beat the biggest star ever there with the fucking people's elbow. Like, you know what I mean? It's like, no, you're watching the match.
It was the rock bottom.
It's the rock bottoms, but
Only Punk got beaten by the people's elbow.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah, that was fucked. I mean, so that was just like, oh, it's a dangerous move. No, it's not. It's a shit-talking move. It's a fucking like, fuck
you.
It's the Jericho stand on him and come on, baby. You know, it's that shit, you know? So, but anyway.
Yeah.
But yeah, Santino, I don't know. It was like, Jobber, entertaining for a while, but I will admit it did rant. Rant scores pretty quick, but at its peak,
totally agree.
I liked it. Alrighty, Steve, time to bring us home with your third pick.
Another one, Stacey won't know. This guy started with the WWE in 1983.
Wow.
And he finished in 2016 when he was actually released from the company. He started out as a wrestler and then became a road agent. Steve Lombardi, the Brooklyn Brawler.
Hey, I'm writing it down right now.
He's a massive jobber. He had a 93% career loss rate. That's probably, he had 283 losses in his career. He was managed by Bobby Heenan at one stage. He did win one match on a pay-per-view, but predominantly he was just used as an enhancement. Basically, when he first started, he was just enhancement talent, and then he just kept losing. He joined Bobby Heenan. He beat, I think he beat the Red Rooster. Everyone remember? Do you remember the Red Rooster there?
Yeah. Cock-a-doodle-doo, man.
he beat him, and then he just lost. He then went, he worked backstage, but then he'd come back as a Brooklyn Brawler or Abe Knuckleball Schwartz or, every now and then.
But he's had a he had a champion a world title match against, was it Bret Hart? I think it would have been. But yeah, no, he's had world title matches, he's had tag team title matches, but he was always there just as enhancement and one of the biggest jobbers in the WWF. He never went anywhere else. Always what, in the WWF.
For Triple H for the title, I think at Madison.
Was it Triple H?
One night.
Yeah, that was probably what it was. Yeah.
As a house show, I think they did it just as a as a thing. Brought him out, yeah. I think. I'm pretty sure it was Triple H. Oh, it was Triple H, but I'm pretty sure it was Madison Square Garden because it looked like New York, obviously, Brooklyn. I'm pretty sure they did it like as a house show thing, as like a one-off, like, yeah, fuck it. Put him in Triple H
put him in there.
The title, and it was, you know, obviously win it anyway, but like it was, yeah, still it was more of a like lifetime achievement award kind of thing, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like
you get to He said that one of the best achievements he had was when they actually made a wrestling figure of him in 2006. But once again, you know, he was the guy that the people wanted to work with because they knew that he was going to make them look good. But yeah, I know a lot of the older people will know who he is, but I'm not sure about the younger generation. They might have seen him in like a battle royal or something in the last 10 years or so, but nothing much.
Yeah, I think people at least know. It's one of those things like you could talk to people who don't know anything about wrestling or haven't heard anything about wrestling, and there are certain names they will know, like older wrestlers, like Killer Kowalski, that kind of stuff. You know what I mean? People will be like, and like George Animal Steel, people will be like, I've heard that name. You know what I mean? Like they know nothing about it, but everyone, like, name three wrestlers or something, and like you ask your granddad, he might, you know, who doesn't even watch wrestling or anything like that, he could, if you said who's Killer Kowalski, he'd probably be like, oh, he's one of those wrestlers, you know, like it's and I think the Brooklyn Brawler kind of is almost like Piper is another one, like Rowdy Roddy Piper, everybody sort of knows that's a wrestler name, you know. Like beyond the guys like Hogan and Rock, I mean, like the you know, that people genuine John Cena even at this stage, but like it's one of those wrestling names that I think people do know just through this sort of osmosis of pop culture, you know, like everybody knows like Rowdy Roddy Piper, George the Animal Steel, you know, Killer Kowalski, and I think the Brooklyn Brawler, I think he's up there. I think people know, they don't, might not know anything else about him, but I think people at least recognize the name. So I think I like that he got the you know, like they kept him around. It wasn't just he was there for a bit and then, you know, they let him go.
He was an agent backstage for years.
Yeah. So I had it mixed up. I looked up the Triple H Brooklyn Brawler thing. I had it mixed up. It's it was an episode of SmackDown in 2000 and Jericho interfered. And attacked Triple H, and Brooklyn Brawler actually pinned Triple H and beat him. And because it was, that's what I must have been thinking of. So, I'm just sort of thinking, my memory is just like Triple H didn't lose to anyone in 2000, you know?
Well, it goes to show how much they must have liked him backstage then.
Yeah, exactly. Like Triple H is like, I'll put him over for a night. Why not? He's deserved it.
Yeah.
And it, like, it's not like he went over clean or anything. So he didn't really beat him. So, you know, which is what I've always said. It's like they always say, oh, it's not believable that this guy could be the world, like The Miz could be world champion. It's like he didn't beat anyone for it. He won it with Money in the Bank. Like, he didn't actually win a wrestling match against, you know, Randy Orton or, you know.
Yeah.
You're
right in a way. He did wrestle a world title match at Madison Square Garden.
Okay.
He won a 20-man battle royal to wrestle against Shawn Michaels.
Ah, see, yeah. I do. I had something that synapses weren't quite firing in the right direction, but I had somewhere it was, something about that.
And then he only lost because China and Triple H interfered.
There you go. See, somewhere it's all merged into one mixed up story, but yeah, but it's even cooler. Yeah,
I could have done some better research too, maybe, but you never know.
No, but
my my memory of Brooklyn Brawler is very fuzzy, but 93% loss rate.
Yeah,
like, yeah, that has to make him like the number one jobber, surely.
Barry Horowitz was 94.
Oh,
so yeah, they both like
top three. Like,
yeah, yeah. And when we discussed doing this topic, for me, that's what I was going on, pure old school jobber who was there to put their talent over. And I think those two are probably two of the, can you say, best jobbers?
Yeah, I think, I guess. Well, that's it.
Did their job properly.
Yeah, and I think that's what's been good about this episode, I think, is where we have had different perspectives on it. So, like, you, Steve, you went with kind of the classic, the classic definition of enhancement talent, and, you know, with like we said, with Barry Horowitz and even Gilbert to a degree, it was sort of just like, well, get him out there, and it did help to put people over, and also it put the WWE over itself in the fact that they were shitting on Goldberg. So Barry Horowitz, Gilbert, and of course the Brooklyn Brawler. Like we said, I went with the three guys that were kind of more just entertaining in the way how shit they were, kind of thing. with La Parca and his craziness in WCW, Santino, like we mentioned before, and the fact that Al Snow was so entertaining with what on paper you wouldn't just think that gimmick will last 2 weeks and everyone will hate it and think it's dumb, but he turned it into a 25-year career, you know. But then, Stace, you went with some more like unconventional picks, but they do make sense when you analyze them a bit more. Like we said, like Mickey James coming back into the fold and pretty much being a jobber to enhance the women's revolution, people like Charlotte, etc. Damian Sandow, like we said, he started with a lot of promise, but he within a year, he was definitely jobber status, and they ruined him. But he managed to be super entertaining at the same time. And of course, the one that I had just completely forgotten all about until tonight was, the Hurricane, whether you liked him like me as a heel, and then when he turned face, you know, he was definitely more popular when he turned face. So a lot of more people jumped on the bandwagon with Hurricane. And yeah, it's sort of almost there's a few of these guys where and ladies where it could be, it's almost like what could have been to a degree had they maybe not saddled them with the gimmick of that they had and said, no, you are a jobber and that's all you'll ever be. But whereas someone like the Brooklyn Brawler, like, I don't think it's not a bad thing to say, like, no, you are the jobber and that is your role in the company, because that's literally, he was the best at it at the time and that's what he did. So, yeah.
I think Damien Sandow's either at Impact or AEW under his real name, Aaron Stevens.
Yeah, the last
I don't think he's at AEW.
Was it AEW?
No, I think he's like with another independent promotion.
Oh, is it NWA?
NWA. I think that's right.
So the last I heard of him, it was TNA, but that was like ages ago.
But the Forbidden Door's been opened by Tony Khan, and apparently they're pretty much going everywhere. So.
Of course it is.
Yeah.
At some point, Tony, you're going to have to start making money, dude. Like, it's,
I think if Punk and Danielson do legit go to AEW, I think it won't be as obviously as big as Hogan, the NWO and that sort of stuff, but I think it'll be a massive corner for them.
Yeah, I heard someone say on another podcast this week that Punk has the potential to actually turn the needle or whatever.
Yeah.
For AEW a little bit, because he would be the only guy, if say he joined the roster tomorrow, and even Daniel Bryan as well, he would be the only guy on that roster that AEW got that wasn't someone that WWE doesn't want anymore.
Yeah.
Or yeah. left because they didn't, or because they thought they weren't getting enough of a push. You know what I mean? So, like,
yep.
Cody Rhodes was unhappy and thought he was a bigger star than he is, so he's created his, you know, thing. The Omega and the Young Bucks, like, they won't step up to the big leagues, you know, because I think they're afraid of being shown up to be like you, the indie guys that they are. Although, to be fair, Omega is not an indie guy, but...
He was offered big money, but he wanted creative control of some point, and they Vince didn't want to.
Because he's got control. It in his head because of people like Meltzer and that he's the best ever. And
yeah.
He's,
you know. Oh, yeah.
And like he's a talented guy, don't get me wrong. If it wasn't for the likes of Meltzer and people like that, I would probably be a fan of Omega, because there's nothing wrong with his ring work and his matches and stuff, but it's just the baggage that
goes. The stuff he's doing as a heel now is good too. Yeah. I like it.
But I mean, like Rusev and you know, what's the guy, the 10 guy? Like those guys, even Jericho. It's like, like WWE didn't want you, so they released you and you've gone to AEW. You didn't choose to go to AEW. Like Jericho did, but Jericho did.
I think Jericho is different. Yeah.
But Jericho did, but it was because he was in the Cody Rhodes boat. He left. Because it's like, oh, well, they're not going to make me world champion anymore and I'm not going to be the big star. It's like, no, dude, because you're 50. This is the exact same thing that you used to say when you were 30 about Hogan and Flair and Savage and those guys. But Punk is different because if Punk said tomorrow, I want to come back to WWE, they'd take him.
Oh, for sure.
And
for sure.
And so he would be the only guy, I think, that is like someone that you could say AEW, like... won the battle to get Punk, whereas all the rest they either just said, well, you're not working there anymore, you can work for us if you want, or they came to them and said, can I work for you? So it wasn't like a bidding war kind of thing. So but that could be interesting. But I think if Adam does Cole,
Cole's another one.
Even Adam Cole though, but he would go there because he doesn't like what's happening at you know what I mean. He's saying like,
did
I
see should how be much they offered star. Him
mm.
Did they? How much Vince offered him?
No,
over $1 million a year. Wow. Over $1 million a year, and he gets to choose whether he wants to be on Raw or SmackDown.
Sure.
Vince. Yeah. Vince wants him on. Vince wants to keep him,
mm.
but he's got a lot of friends in the Young Bucks and Omega and all that who he was in the Bullet Club with, in AEW. So I don't know.
Mm.
If I was Cole, I'd take the $1 million a year and stay.
Oh, in
the
WWE. You just stay 1 year.
I mean, he's a young guy as well. It's not like he's 50. Like, you know, stay for 2 or 3 years, get your $3 million and then go party with your friends, you know? Like,
yeah, exactly. So. Exactly. And AJ Styles is amazing, but I think Adam Cole is just as good as AJ Styles. He's not as big as AJ Styles, obviously, but I think he's just as good.
Yeah, I think so. As far as in ring, for sure. But well, before this becomes an AEW show, please follow us on Twitter. I'm at GregT13. Stacey is at Little Sherby, and Steve is at Stinger57. And of course, you can follow our account at AussieTop3. And as always, all roads lead to at the Steel Cage. Thanks again, guys. We've done another show, episode 23. Hopefully the next episode won't have as long a break due to some of the madness that's happening down under at the moment. But we will do our very best to be back in a week or two. But until then, this has been episode 23 of Aussie Top 3. And until next time, we'll see you next time.